speech impediment man, you're on the air.
Good morning. My name is Smiley.
It's really a shame that you're not hyperactive, because that I know well.
Let me fight with the rifle in one hand and good book in the other.
Yeah. She gets to boss you around in two languages, so.
Oh, but she would never do that.
I wish that I never had to deal with this.
You couldn't catch me if I stole your chair with you in it.
My chair with me in it? That's very exciting. Let me ask you a question, Bonehead. Why are you trying to kill me?
Who did spotted puppy coat?
A cup of tea, Ken?
Yeah, he'd like one.
It's Ken! Coming to kill me!
Out of the thousands of characteristics that make you who you are, uttering is only one.
Yeah, like it takes like a little bit more time to get our words out. But we are going to get them out, just like it takes a little bit more time.
Welcome to Stoner Talk. Eric Jackson here with Peter Reitzis.
Hey.
Hey. And our return guest who was on the show last week, Roisin McManus. Hey, Roisin.
Hi, everyone.
What's going on?
How about a quick reminder for International Stuttering Awareness Day Online Conference? That is going on live now. At www.stutteringhomepage.com.
The Stutter Talk at stuttertalk.com. 206-888-4619. And speaking about things going online, I was just a victim of identity theft. And let me tell you, it is a huge pain in the ass. Why someone would want to steal my identity, I haven't quite figured out. I love ISAD, but there is something scary about things being online in this day and age.
Not Stutter Talk. All right. I was walking to the post office today on my lunch break in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, and I passed on the street somebody who stopped and yelled, Mr. Reitzis, just like that.
With a stutter.
And I turned around, and I couldn't believe it was my first student who stuttered I ever worked with from my first year of working, like about 9 years ago.
Working in the public school
working
system?
Working in the public schools. My first client who stuttered. I had him in a group with four other boys who stuttered. It was a great
really?
School year. I had five children who stuttered. And he comes up to me. I'll call him Michael. And he says to me, Mr. Reitzis, you were my favorite teacher ever. He just graduated from high school at the end of last school year. He's going on to college. And he's stuttering. So I said to him, Michael, I hope you don't mind if I ask you, how's your stuttering? And he said, looking at me in the eye, I don't mind at all. It's pretty good, but when I go on job interviews, it's kind of tough. And I was just so impressed that I didn't care that he was stuttering. I was impressed that he was talking about stuttering still and not worried about it. I mean, obviously, I didn't do an evaluation, but just the fact that he was smiling and talking to me about it and asking me about my life, I just thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. So
it sounds like you planted a couple seeds 9 or so years ago.
It feels like I did.
How old are you now? In your mid-40s?
Old. Oh, goodness.
Well, hey, it's a great story, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, every now and then.
So when you first started working with him, was he really struggling with it?
Big time. Yeah, stuttering a lot.
It's good that that this person had a good experience in the public school system. Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, that never, well, I won't say never, but that rarely, rarely happens. And I'm not faulting the SLPs in the schools who don't know jack about stuttering. I'm just saying usually kids don't get good therapy for stuttering in the public school system.
This kid was smart. He asked me once in class if girls stuttered. And I told him, yeah. And he goes, I don't believe you. Bring some in. So I did. And he's like, bring some more in.
That's cool.
No, it was really cool to have a group of five boys who stuttered at the same. They were third, fourth, and fifth graders. And I have videos, you know, of course, with permissions and everything. And I have videos of them acting out plays about stuttering and performing for their classmates. And it was really special to have that group, especially my first year.
Yeah. Well, speaking of having a stutterer on your caseload in your first year, I brought up on the show a couple of weeks ago how I am working with a stutterer right now. She's a 3.5-year-old girl, and the father had lots of concerns with me working with his child. And basically, just a little recap of where that stands. I had mentioned last time that the school requested a meeting between me, my supervisor, the director at the school, and the parents. And they actually had the meeting without me.
First? And like before you were in the meeting, they had a meeting previous?
Yeah. So I had called home. I'd spoke with the mother. I got the mother really excited about me working with her daughter, but I never spoke to the father. And the director at the school thought it would be best if I wasn't there, so the parent could speak their mind without, you know, feeling bad or something about saying that they don't want me as a speech therapist.
That probably wouldn't have happened if you had more experience. They probably wouldn't pull that with a speech therapist who had been there a couple of years. That's my gut, because you're new, they're going to do things like that.
I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, a long story short, they had the meeting. My supervisor kind of also advocated for me in the meeting, which I was kind of upset about. I wanted to do it myself, but they just kind of had the meeting. And I'm not faulting my supervisor or the agency I work for. The school requested that. After the meeting, I finally had a conversation with the dad. I got the dad super excited. The dad sounds like he's a super involved parent. He said that he's looking forward to working together this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good.
So I'm kind of happy about that.
So I actually went to a public speaking workshop over the weekend. At AIS, and it was kind of hosted by a man named Simon, who had come to AIS about 10 years ago.
Could you just let everyone know what AIS stands for?
Right. So it stands for the American Institute for Stuttering. And it's the place where Eric and I had completed the intensive program. So the man who was hosting it would kind of we'd do a little public speaking like blurb, and then he would kind of critique us, or not critique us, but every person in the room would give their input. So when the guy who was hosting it critiqued me, he told me that he said the kind of stuttering that you have is benign. He used the word benign. he's like, so you're someone who can effectively get your message across and still stutter.
So your stuttering isn't going to kill you, is what he's saying.
Right.
It's not a malignant
actually,
stutter.
That's what he said, actually.
Yeah, it's not a malignant stutter. Right. Those malignant stutters are really tough to deal with.
And I was kind of like, okay.
Thank God that you don't have one of those malignant stutters.
I'm sorry, Roisin. I just want to break in and say that when I do an evaluation and I find that I'm dealing with a malignant stutterer, it's really hard to break that to the parents.
Like, I have to get out of the solution as quickly as possible. Yeah,
I'm just like, look, I'm going to give your son 6 months. okay, Roisin, I am sorry. I had to get it's like a tick. I had to get it out.
Right.
So now you may continue.
So, and when he said that, I was just kind of like, okay. I mean, I just kind of took it. And I was thinking that I've been getting that sort of feedback back a lot. The other week, I was looking at a blog that I recorded in like June, and it was on YouTube, so people could comment on it. And a person had commented like, "Roisin, you're such a lucky person that you're so like light that you can actually advertise and like let it happen and be happy and succeed." And then I've had a few people, it's mostly from people who actually stutter. I've never heard from someone who doesn't stutter, who like talks to me about, "Oh, like you're being more open now, it's because your stutter's you don't have many secondary behaviors." It's always from people who actually stutter. But I've had a few people be like, "But when I hear you stutter, it's like you're so like tension free, and like I'm just not, and like having all those things happen repeatedly has kind of like given me the idea that people are kind of assuming two things. The first one is that for me to like to stutter openly and talk about it and advertise is easy or easier, and that for people who have really tense blocks or who stutter more or have like twitches or like kind of like secondary behaviors, that those people can't be open about it and can't be kind of like light hearted and can't like effectively get their message across. And both of those assumptions to me are pretty insulting. I want to see what your guys' thoughts are on that.
One thought I had is that while it might feel insulting, I think it's helpful to look at a person's intentions. Mm-hmm. So when they say to you, "Oh, it looks like you're very confident and it's easy for you," I mean, what do you think's behind that?
Well, for that particular comment, I think maybe the use of the word insulting is strong, because when someone tells me that, it's like you seem like you're remaining like sort of calm and you can like make your message clear. That makes me happy, because it's something that I've been working on.
Yeah.
But for me, it's not insulting, but I feel like it's almost dangerous, because when people, especially on the blog, when that person was like, "You're so lucky, like you're so fortunate that you're a person who can be open," where like he was implying that certain people can't be.
Mm. I have a lot to say about this. I remember when I first started making changes after I went through the program, people would consistently say to me, "Oh, well, you're that type of person that can go out there and stutter openly and stutter in front of people." And you got to just remember, Eric, that some people are not like that. And I always thought that that was bullshit because the way I took it was that they were saying they were kind of minimizing what I was doing. Like that was not. It was not easy for me 500 times to advertise on the subway. That was not easy.
500 times?
It was somewhere around there, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, go on.
I once sat down and I tried to figure it out.
I did it 501 times.
But like, it's... I get that people have different personalities, and I get that some people are just more extroverted than other people are, but I always thought, and I could be sounding like a dick right now, but I always thought that people who made that comment like, oh, you can do stuff like that because you're that type of person. I thought that person was making an excuse.
They might be making an excuse. I don't know, but what strikes me is that it's probably coming from a place of pain or envy / pain.
I guess I understand that it may be coming from a place of pain and or a place of envy or a place of a whatever. I always took it like a person was minimizing my efforts.
It's really hard to feel dismissed. You put in the work, you put in the hours, and somebody sees the final product or, you know, the product in work or whatever you want to call yourself. So if I would have met you when I was 22, and this happened, when I was about 22, I met somebody who stuttered and it was hard for me to process it.
Mm-hmm.
Like here I am trying so hard not to do this thing. And this guy, my buddy, John, was just stuttering openly. And I don't even want to say proudly, he was just doing it. And he would give a poetry reading and make a joke about his stuttering. And it was really hard to process that. Mm-hmm. Like I was processing stuttering as shame and there were no other avenues. And then you turn on YouTube and there's Roisin who's just looks like you're making it easy and you're not. I mean, it's hard for you, but I can see how that could be like painful for somebody.
Right. But from like... For me, the thing that I'm concerned about or feel like I have to respond to is not to how I feel. Because I know that with all the stuff that I'm working on, it's like I'm happier.
Okay.
I don't have to prove that to people that like that this is hard work for me. Like I really worked on this. I mean, like because it's something that I've kind of lived. And it's not for the person that's really speaking on it. Because if they're in pain, then that's from something that they're living through. But like, I feel like I have to respond. Let me try to see if I make this clear. I feel like I have to respond because it's like almost irresponsible. Okay. Because I feel like the reason that I was doing all these blogs is not to make people see that like for certain people it you'll get to a point where it'll be easy or you'll get to a point where like it'll just happen that like anyone could do it and like
so what were you doing all the blogs for?
To like no, I'm saying that I was doing it to make it clear that if anyone could kind of be in this place where like anyone could I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but that anyone could be open or anyone could be on a blog.
When years ago, before there were blogs, I remember when the Manhattan Stuttering Group was in the New York Times. And a woman read, I was one of the people who was featured in the article, and a woman called me. She said she'd been stuttering for 60 years and that she just wanted to thank us for being open about stuttering and for talking about it and for making her feel less alone. And mm-hmm. I said to her, well, why don't you come out to one of our meetings and you can sit with us and talk with us? And she's like, I can't. It's too hard for me. Those years, I missed my chance. And said to her, well, you know, we're here twice a month, you know, every other Wednesday. And she's like, my time has passed. Mm-hmm. Like she had resigned herself that she wasn't going to make any stuttering changes.
Right.
And I think it's really easy for anyone to get in that place. And then one day you wake up and that place isn't where you want to be anymore. So, I mean, it's nice that you feel responsibility, but all you can do is put out there what you think and how you feel. And hopefully other people, you're planting seeds and people will respond how they can at the time.
Right. So in your opinion, like, how should I respond to those people who are for the person on the blog? I really wanted to respond to their post. Just the people who are watching the blog would see that post and then see me respond. Because I feel like that comment made it kind of seem like there were two like tiers of people who stutter, and that like one tier of people could be open and like have people hear it, and then that the other tier of people really couldn't, and they were kind of forced to be in shame, which in my opinion is just false.
Hmm.
But I didn't want to like attack the person on the blog.
I have an
idea. So I had no idea how to respond.
My gut these days, for me, what feels right is to just give my experience. So I don't know your experience, but if this were me, I would say something like, well, my stuttering story is this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give an outline of how hard it was for me. Mm-hmm. And how I can make the changes that I did and what it took to make those changes. And I'll tell people, you know, I was so ashamed of my stuttering that for three and a half years, all I did was stutter on purpose. I did voluntary stuttering every day because I had to. Mm-hmm. And I saw it as a failure if I didn't. So that's just my very personal experience. I would stay with your experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think you bring up a good point, though, too. It's like, how responsible do you want to feel? I mean, to me, it depends on, well, one, it depends on how much time you have. Because to really get your story across, it's going to take a lot of writing and like back and forth. And the second thing is, which we were kind of hinting to before, people are ready to hear this stuff when they're ready to hear this stuff. And some people are not in the place to hear it. And no matter what you do, it's not going to do any good. Like, we've gotten a lot of emails like, you guys are posers. You guys are losers.
Posers? Why posers?
Fake stuttering and all this stuff. Uh-huh. And like,
most of the mail we get, and this is not congratulatory, is very positive. We had a few people get really mad at us because we recorded ourselves calling businesses using voluntary stuttering and uh-huh. demonstrating to people how to advertise. And a couple people who stutter got really mad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About that, because like, how can you, if you have the ability not to stutter, how dare you do it on purpose? And we in our response is, well, for us, it's very important to be open about stuttering. It's very important to stutter on purpose, not to be ashamed of it, to remind ourselves not to be ashamed of it. And that's what helps me. And I just stick to the me. This is what mm-hmm. I need to do. And right. I want to share it with people.
Right.
And thank you for the explanation, sir.
Are you saying I went on too long?
No.
This is his way of sticking it to me.
Some people just won't get it. It's like, how responsible do you want to be on your journey right now? Let's take a break.
I have one more thought, and then I'll stop. Okay. So I feel like when I was thinking of how to respond, I was sort of walking a lot line of either making it clear that anyone who stutters has the option of accepting it and even letting it happen. So that one side of me wanted to make that clear, but then the other side of me didn't want to make it seem like I was chastising people who were still kind of struggling with letting it happen. So I was just sort of in the middle, but I'm done.
Okay. Before we go into the break, we want to send out a congratulations to fellow stutterer Jeffrey Britt. Jeffrey Blitz, who just won an Emmy for directing one of the episodes in The Office. And we're going to play a clip over the break here. And I don't know, there may or there may not be some things to talk about after we get back.
Hey, this is Sarah D'Agostino from the National Stuttering Association. And I've got a riddle for you. What does Jimi Hendrix guitar and over 600 people who stutter have in common? Answer? They'll both be in Cleveland in 2010. Yes, it's the National Stuttering Association's 2010 conference this year in Cleveland, Ohio. It's July 7th through the 10th. It is the premier meeting of people who stutter of all ages, including children, teens, and adults. Adults who stutter, as well as their parents, family members, and professionals in the industry. Check it out online on our website at www.westutter.org.
Jeff Blitz reports that he went to the School of Hard Knocks, where he majored in French literature. The first thing he did when he learned of his nomination was to kiss Angelina Jolie and then go back to bed. This is the first Emmy win and nomination for Jeffrey Blitz.
Wow, I hope I do as well at this as I did in that little segment there. As you could see there, I'm not great at this stuff. So I just want to say thanks to the show and to say thanks to that cat that got thrown into the air and came down with this. So thank you so much.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk, everyone. Peter Wrights is here with Eric Jackson and Roisin McManus. Hey, y'all. Back to the microphone, y'all. Okay. That clip we just heard of Jeffrey Blitz, I think is pretty interesting. And let me tell you why. As knowing that he's a stutterer, it sure felt like he raced through that acceptance speech because he didn't want to stutter. He was umming. He made a comment that this was hard for him. And my opinion is he's going to do what he wants at the time that he can do it. But I kind of wish he enjoyed the moment a little more. Mm. And I have to think that moment was sculpted by his stuttering. Roisin, I always call on Eric first, so let's give you first shot here.
I'm just envisioning myself in his shoes, and I would probably be in the crowd the whole time, dreading winning. Unfortunately, I don't know. I mean, I don't really think like have a judgment on how he could have handled it. But I agree that as opposed to being something that I was really really like joyous. It was probably a little clouded by anxiety, I assume.
Yeah. It reminds me of when we had Steve on the show. Steve, who is a professional or a semi-professional pool player. Like, he said he wouldn't want to go to or reach the level of any competitions or winning any competitions because he wouldn't know how to speak to the reporters or the interviewers or whatever.
I grew up a fan of the Philadelphia Phillies, and I was always told that I could be a professional bait. Okay. May I continue? My grandfather was a professional baseball player. So in my family, when they said, you could be a professional baseball player, they were serious. And I never thought I could do it because I would stutter after the games. But then for my hometown team, the Philadelphia Phillies, the star pitcher, Steve Carlton, wouldn't give an interview, would not talk to the press his entire career, period. And then I realized I could be a professional baseball player because if I was good enough, I wouldn't have to talk on camera.
How did people interpret him as someone who wouldn't give any interview views?
I think it was interpreted as he got burned and he said he would never get burned again by a reporter. So it was kind of like, well, that's just his choice. I never thought it was negative. So, you know, Jeffrey Blitz,
it kind of
kills me, man.
It brings me back to like the hours, the days, the weeks, the months before a presentation of some sort, or I had to speak in front of a group or give a best man toast or something, and how I wasn't thinking about like the cool thing I was doing at all. I wasn't thinking about the presentation. I wasn't thinking about the toast. I was just nervous and scared of stuttering. And that's what it brings me back to. And I'm wondering, because clearly we know.
I want three pictures, one, two, three.
Take another picture of Peter.
Stop,
please.
Disrespecting me on air.
No, it just makes me wonder. Yeah, sure, we know that Jeff Blitz is a person who stutters, and we could clearly tell that he was avoiding up there, but I wonder what kind of impression people who don't really know a lot about stuttering get.
But I see what you're saying, but I don't think that matters. I really don't. What matters is it was his moment.
Well, we talked about that already. I was trying to bring it somewhere else.
Who was the woman the country singer who won an award recently, and the rapper guy came on stage and took the microphone?
What was her name?
Okay. Anyway, it felt Miley like Cyrus? Jeffrey Blitz no. took his own microphone.
It was Miley Cyrus, yeah.
No.
Oh, no, it was Taylor Swift.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like, how awful is it for someone to take a microphone from you at your moment? But how awful is it when we take our own microphone? And here's the point. Jeffrey Blitz, from what it seems, made a decision based on the possibility that he might stutter. And that's what was driving my life so bad for so long, was making choices based on this possibility that my words might get stuck. And I don't want to live like that anymore. So when I see someone else do it, a brother, a stuttering brother or sister, it bothers me. I maybe that's selfish, but it's painful, you know?
Yeah, we're going to get Jeff hopefully sometime soon on the show. So it will be interesting to talk about that. But a big congratulations out to our man, yeah. Jeff Blitz.
I mean, I also feel like maybe at that point, he just wasn't really prepared at all to go up there and have that happen. I mean, that could have really like torn him down. Where like I've definitely been in a place where like not that avoiding something is always good. I mean, it's always is ever good, but I mean, he might have been completely happy and proud, and like for him to kind of enjoy that time, that's what he sort of had to do with the time.
And I'm not suggesting he should have done something different, yeah. Because you do what you can at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, do you ever feel sometimes that you're broken? And I'm going to get to it. At my age, I don't...
Just take it from there.
I want to get a few thoughts out first. I don't really do this anymore, but recently I was having a conversation. And just to do it, to remind myself I could, there was a word that I was fearing saying a little bit. So I got the person I was speaking to say it first. Again, I wasn't avoiding. I would have stuttered. I just wanted to play with it. So I'll make it up. So I got them to say something like the word pizza. And once they said it, I could say it without stuttering. And I know it. I just wanted to remind myself about how stupid and crazy stuttering is. So that happened recently. And then a couple of days ago, and Eric's going to tease me, I was at the gym. I'm going to the same gym for 9 years. He's going to tease me.
Apparently, every single day for 9 years.
Yeah, apparently. That's one of the funniest things you've ever said. Okay, so I go in. I give my number. I don't have a gym card. I just give my number. They check me in. Then I went to buy something, and I didn't have any money, but they have my credit card on file. So she said, oh, what's your ID number? I couldn't remember the number I've been using for 9 years. She had to look it up. And while I didn't stutter, my brain farted, I blanked. And I have to think that's related somehow to stuttering. And sometimes I feel a little broken.
Oh, wait, the brain fart, though. When I think of the brain fart, I immediately associate it with stuttering. You're saying that it wasn't really any kind of like stoppage. It was just kind of you forgot the number was.
That's a good question. Like sometimes with stuttering, I get in that fog where I forget. I forget what to do. I forget that I can do something else to get out of the stutter. I mean, whatever it is, something about stuttering has always made me feel a little broken, sometimes a lot broken. Even though I deal with it well now, in my own opinion, I still feel a little broken. And sometimes my mind does things like forgetting a number that I've been using for 9 years. And I think it's a little related to that glitch in the system. Maybe, you know, either way, it makes me feel a little broken. So I just wanted to throw it out there. Or we can move on.
No. I think there's a ton to say.
Yeah.
And by the way, and coming from a good place right now, I'm not upset about it, but I want to talk about it.
Right. I think that there's definitely a moment you
nice stutter.
Usually, sorry. Thank you. usually, if I'm like about to say a word, and I know that the stutter is going to happen, but instead of having it happen, my body sort of instinctively pushes it out, and it doesn't actually happen at that moment. Once in a while, I'll kind of almost like black out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be like, ah. And I'll be like, whoa, that was a really physiological and intense reaction. And that's, but like when the stuttering happens, I don't have that same like physiological thing happening. But I don't, that's one thing I kind of related to.
Yeah. I'm going to give one more example. Like Eric and I have talked on the show about playing the guitar, and I can play a guitar piece with no mistakes. And then I make a mistake with a guitar piece I know well. And then the next time I play it, I make the same mistake. And with stuttering, all of a sudden, I stutter on a word at work, even to this very day. I stutter on that word, maybe file cabinet. And then the next time I say it, I stutter on it again. And all of a sudden, that word file is hard. And it just makes me feel a little broken.
Yeah, I've certainly spent a long time feeling broken, and I know what that is. And they'll do. I was signing my name. Now, a little backstory on this. Stutter Talk recently had to fill out a bunch of paperwork, and I kind of have like a doctor signature. And when Peter saw it, he was like, dude, we can't sign legal documents like this. And I actually have gotten stopped at a voting booth because of my signature before. First thing, okay, I think...
To be fair, it was like a line drawn across a paper.
No.
It
was this.
Okay.
That's horrible.
It was the bottom one. Okay. Actually, anyway,
And Roisin is studying to be a nurse. If you saw that on a patient, you think they were dead, right?
Yeah,
first thought is that, yeah, probably one of the reasons I am... my identity is being thieved right now. Second thought, I think I developed this because sometimes when I was in front of people as a kid, I had a hard time signing my name.
Wow.
Third, I recently went back to my own signature, which is this one, right? Which... It feels like stuttering when I'm signing my name.
Hmm.
And it has nothing to do with speaking. And we've, you were talking about the music thing, Peter, playing guitar. We have talked about signing and stuttering, not signing your name, but sign language and stuttering. I feel like I stutter when I sign my name. Especially when there's pressure on me, there's people around me, I'm at some sort of thing like a voting booth or whatever.
But dude, when you signed your name like that, I looked at it and I said, dude, we cannot mail this in. You've got to do this again. And you said to me, do you remember what you said?
Probably something like, I can't do it in front of you or something.
No, you said, I can't. And I'm like, Eric, just sign your name, make it legible, print it. And you kept saying, I can't.
First of all, was about to say...
You got that right, sister.
Wait a second, what? Whoa. Roisin's about to get kicked out of here.
And thank you for joining us for the last time, Roisin.
Peter was about to say, just slow down, Eric, sign your name.
I didn't realize at first that it really was a thing for you. I'm like, dude, they're gonna mail this back, we're gonna have to do it again. Sorry, dude.
The reason why, like, what you just said just strikes me as kind of strange is because I feel like with your first signature, where they couldn't tell what your name actually was, you'd have someone ask you your name, and then you'd have to. I don't know if your name is hard for you to do, but then you'd have to. And then, I feel like there'd be a lot of times it's like, well, what does this even say?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The instinct would be to make it very clear.
But if you really think about all the times you have to sign something, your name is in print somewhere there, right. Or they know your name somehow, you're just signing. Right. So that, yeah, I see what you're saying, but that was never really an issue, and it was just easier for me to go like this in front of people standing on a line than it was for me to sit there and be like that.
See, I still don't. Now that you just told me that you were feeling tension, I felt tension when you did that.
See that?
I was like, oh my God. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that we have this luxury in life to be able to worry so much about stuttering? I mean, if you think of, like, I look back at my childhood and you know, maybe this is going to sound a little loopy, but maybe I had too much free time on my hands. Like, I almost think at times my stuttering was obsessive, you know, and I have to think maybe if I had a job at 9 years old, I don't want to make light of it. I'm not trying to make light of it, but I had time to really obsess over how much I was scared of talking.
If we were in a country where you were basically forced to fend for yourself at like 9, I could see my stuttering being way, way less of a problem for me. I was brought up, good childhood as far as having opportunities and money and good friends and all this, whatever. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, yeah, if I really had serious problems to worry about at the time, of course, stuttering seemed like my serious problem. But if I really had serious problems, I think something may have been different.
Oh my God, a seamless transition. We actually got an email from New Zealand from Lisette.
What's a seamless transition at Stutter Talk?
This is good. And Lisette was sharing with us how much she liked one of our episodes we did a month or two ago. Because I forget exactly why she brought it up, but she was saying, about my learning disabilities, how my mother came on the show and said, because of my learning disabilities, stuttering was never the main focus. And Lisette was saying, well, I'm blind. And because I'm blind, no one took my stuttering as that big of a deal. But it was, you know, so it's sort of interesting, like, what we think is a big deal, but what other people think is a big deal. Does that make sense? Because, like, when I was growing up, I knew I had learning disabilities, but to me, it was the stuttering that was so vicious. But my parents were concerned about, will he read? I was concerned about, I don't want to talk.
I mean, like, I think the reason that we focus so much on our stuttering is that to communicate with another person is, like, a very, very basic human instinct. And I feel like stutterers are kind of told either subtly through, like, kind of media or movies or that kind of thing, or blatantly that it's really hard to stutter and also effectively communicate. So that kind of threatens a very basic instinct.
I just want to ask you something about your stuttering really quickly.
Yeah.
When you get into a big block, you kind of stop and you exhale. Is that what's going on there?
I mostly inhale because at that point, if I'm openly stuttering and I stop, it's because I've completely run out of air. And I just, like, either I'm like, or like I have to just inhale and just say it again.
And as we're talking about all this, I remember talking with a father of a child who stuttered. Nice guy, really nice guy, trying to get stuttering. And he said to me, this was like 15 years ago, I had no ideas of being a speech therapist. He was just talking to me as a stutterer. And of all the questions he asked me, he's like, well, the one thing I want to know is, like, when you're stuttering, And he's talking about his son too. Like, what's going on in your head? Like, what are you thinking? And I'm like, wait, that's a good question. What am I thinking? He's like, yeah, because I just want to know, like, something's going on, but what's going on? Okay, I just wanted to throw that out. Because you got
you kind of lost me.
Well,
no, because the stutter I was having was a long, repetitive
and
stutter.
When you took the pause there, when you took a breath, I thought to myself, I wonder why she did that. You know, and I can ask you, and Eric can ask you, like he just did, which is why I didn't bring the pieces together, which is why I'm bringing this up now. Mm-hmm. But a casual listener, a boss, a friend, a colleague might not say to you, "We're stutter talk." But you know,
right.
Your mom might not say, "Roisin, I want to know. Clue me in here."
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's a good point.
I love being stutter talk.
I wish the general public would have a bigger set of collective balls.
Yeah, no.
I agree.
I was actually thinking about that recently, because like recently that I've been telling more people that it's happening, and I have certain people who will ask me questions about it then, which is awesome. So yeah. I want to talk about it, but then I have certain people who I'll tell it to them, like, okay, and then like it will happen. They'll be kind of like still looking away and just be really awkward. And I want to like almost bring it up so they can ask me questions, but I feel like most people still feel. And I assume like once I advertise, they'd be like, "She's okay with it." Like we can just ask her quick questions, which I want to happen. Yeah. But I feel like it doesn't like happen as often as I'd like almost.
Maybe that's what.
We're all pointing.
Maybe that's what
I raised my hand first.
Responsibility.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But as Roisin pointed out, you're older, so I'm going to go first. I think we always talk about what the responsibility of the listener should be, and we never really have an answer. Or we say things like, you know, well, they should let you take your time and they should be empathetic and all this. But I think the responsibility of the listeners should be to be okay asking a person when they don't really get something. So if a person's blocking, say like, hey, and if the stutter isn't saying anything, say, hey, so you're a person who stutters or something like that. Is that fair to say? Or is that like, oh, well, yeah, that would be great for us. But for a lot of other people who stutter, it would be like, what right. the
f-? I think right. that's off. I understand. I understand why you're saying that. But I think that's off. I mean, because one, so many of us, including myself, stutter in a way that demonstrates to people, we don't want you asking us questions. And, you know, if somebody's going to, so many of us stutter. I stuttered with such great shame for most of my life. Why would anybody stutter?
With such great shame.
Yeah. I think that if we want to talk about stuttering, we need to talk about stuttering. We need to bring people into our world where stuttering is okay. Because right now in the real world, you know, people whisper about stuttering because they don't know it's okay to talk about it.
See, I kind of disagree a little bit in the sense that I don't necessarily think that by bringing people into our world, we're really going to make any big changes. I think that we have to go out into the world.
Yeah.
And force our way out.
That's what I'm saying. We have to talk about stuttering. I don't think we can expect other people to open that door. We have to open those doors. That's what I'm saying. Like, if we want people to talk to us about stuttering, we have to be the ones to say, by the way, I stutter. Roisin?
I feel like before the past basically year where I started trying to like think about all this stuff, it was something that I was completely kind of closed to. But at the same time, I would love, like, it would have really helped if a person had just asked, or if a person, like, there are some people who are always like, oh, you stutter, so like, don't worry if you talk slower, it'll help. Not that that would never help, but if someone had been like, oh, it's like you stutter, and I kind of asked, I said yeah, and they were like, well, like, how does it feel, or like, how has it been? I feel like that would have really helped. But I feel like but I wasn't at a point for me to initiate that, to make it happen. But I feel like it would have helped. So, and since this whole advertising thing has kind of happened, I've had to almost stop myself in certain situations when someone has a certain, I don't know, it's like a burn or something that sort of like was very obvious, but like wasn't talked about. That I've had to stop myself from asking, just because I like relate it to stuttering. That I wish someone had asked.
See, there's something to be said about like super objective observations or feedback. I'm not saying in a making fun of way, but even if a person was in a place of shame and a person wasn't ready, this is the real world, you know? A person just pointing out, hey, so you stutter? Like, to me, it seems like even if the stutterer is not ready to like take that invitation somewhere, it doesn't seem like it would be that bad of a thing.
I'm not saying it would be bad.
Yeah.
I just think we open our own doors. I mean, I waited my whole life for our door to open, and actually there were a couple people who tried to talk to me about stuttering, but it wasn't very positive. So, you know, I wanted to talk to my parents about stuttering. I had to open that door, you know?
So. All right. Well, let's wrap things up here. How about Roisin takes us out today?
You've been listening to stuttertalk. And you can email us at stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com or call at 2006-888-4619. Thanks for listening.